Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. I'm Steve Marks.
And I'm Wade Wegner.
We have an awesome show. What adjectives do we normally use? Terrific,
cool.
Great show.
Super.
This one's awesome.
Fantastic.
We're going to be talking about phones, yep. Phony stuff.
Yep, phone devices.
Phone devices?
Mobile devices.
That sounds a little, all right.
But we've got,
but that's our big news is the feature is,
Talking
every phone
phones.
You can imagine.
And we're going to put some Windows Azure in there as
we've
well.
We've got a Windows
a
Azure toolkit for it,
yep.
Even the like rotary, whatever, we got that covered too. And we've got some sort of tip at the end that I'm going to talk about events or topology changes. We'll see when we get there. But before that, of course, we've got
some news. All right.
What's in the news?
Just released the Windows Azure Toolkit for social games. So our friend Nathan Totten, who's been on the show, has released the version 1.0 of the Windows Azure Toolkit for social games. So we've talked about it before. Essentially, what he's done is built a set of server APIs that are pretty common to most turn-based games that you can play on the web or devices and so forth, and made these APIs available through this toolkit so that essentially, most of the work has been done for you.
Yeah.
And then from here on out, it's a matter of customizing it and then building out the appropriate UI on top of it.
And it ships with the example Tankster.
Yes.
Best game ever.
Yes, best game ever. Your favorite game, I think.
It's my favorite game because I get to shoot nuclear warheads at you when
yeah.
we play it.
So Tankster was a HTML5 app built on top of these server APIs. So Grant Skinner's team built out this great HTML5 app. They've been enhancing it
yep.
since the first release. We've seen a lot of enhancements just in terms of the turn-based play, multiplayer aspect.
You know what our tip of the week should be? It should be don't play Wade. Don't play against Wade when you play this game because
yeah.
he seems to have put in quite some time playing
yeah.
with the game. So he's pretty good at it.
But yeah, so you can play the game at tankster.net. And you can also take a look at the toolkit as well. So really, really good stuff. I know a lot of things are being done right now to provide some additional examples of how you can use these server APIs with different games. Because we're saying we've got a generic set of server APIs,
right.
but
there's
we're going
to
show
one example.
We only
right
have
now
one example. We're going to show you some other stuff coming up here soon. So Nathan's pretty busy. So.
I'm hoping for Casino War.
Casino
That's the game
War.
That I would like to see. That's
throw
really complicated.
The table.
No, that's not at all what
like,
war.
Like Chinese dogs.
Yes, yes. Okay, that's the game. let's move on.
All right.
Checking your SQL Azure server connection.
We talked about this a few weeks ago.
We did. Because, right, we talked about this in... the point of this blog post really is it's got a very simple message. It's got a bunch of details about stuff, but it has a very simple message, which is don't really look at that version number, okay? Basically, what a lot of people are doing is they're checking whether they're hitting SQL Server or SQL Azure by looking at the version number.
Right, right.
And that's probably not a good idea because that version number actually changes all the time
right.
as new versions come up and whatever.
Yeah, with each update, you're going to change that
and
number.
For a while during an update, you might see one version number sometimes and one another time. So even if you go and even if you realize it and go change your code to look for the new version number, sometimes you might still hit an old one or whatever.
Right.
So
for
it's
like
just a bad idea.
For like a millisecond period, there's still maybe an
that's,
older one
that's
there
how
that
long
hasn't been
it
upgraded.
Takes. So, but there's a good answer, which is what you should be doing is you should do this command here, select server property engine edition, and look for the number 5, which 5 is the number of letters in the word Azure, and so that's how that's derived.
Yes.
Server has 6, so it's probably a, no, I don't actually know what it is,
yeah,
but 5 does mean that's what you want to look for if you want to test for SQL Azure. So
yep.
do that, and you'll be
yep.
all right.
Yep.
If you look at the version number, you're just going to have pain.
Yep.
Just bringing pain into your life.
Pain and sorrow.
So don't do that.
Cool. Well, thanks for that tip.
All right.
All right. Who's this guy?
I don't know.
He's a poker player. We discovered that last week.
Oh, man. I thought we were done with that. Yeah, so this is up on my blog. You can go check it out for all the details. But basically, I packaged up a nice little pair of NuGet packages handy for one for sort of running Memcached in Windows Azure, just sort of starting it. And one as a client for Memcached in Windows Azure for .NET
mm-hmm.
That properly handles like as servers come and go, and if you're
yeah.
scaling up your Memcached roll and scaling it back down. So it's pretty nice. I finally sort of got on the NuGet train.
Yeah.
And so now these are proper, like you just install package.
Everything you're doing is NuGet.
Whatever,
now, right?
And then it's just
like building them like crazy.
It appears. I've got more. By the time the show goes, I suspect there'll be another one or two NuGet packages on my blog. Yeah. Well, it's a nice way to. It's a very easy way to sort of just import the thing and whatever.
It is.
And so. So I got that here, so check out the post for those details, but kind of makes it easier.
Pretty quickly, you talk about the Windows Azure caching service. Like, how would you position these so that people really understand when I should look to use Windows Azure caching versus Memcached, which you're talking about here?
I think default to using Windows Azure caching, the App Fabric caching, because that's, as a service, you just sort of click a button and you get it.
Yep, I mean, you're done.
It's great. Memcached, I think, comes in particularly when people like want to reuse the RAM on the servers they've already got and whatever. Yeah. So suppose you've got a bunch of web servers and they all have half a gigabyte of free RAM.
Yep. Just
might
there.
As well sort of turn that into a distributed cache and just use it. And it's basically free because it's already sitting there on there.
And
it consumes CPU and what I mean. Don't just turn it on thinking you won't pay any penalty for it because you're doing more work. If you actually have that sort of situation, which is really common in a web server where you might be sort of network bound or whatever, but in terms of some spare CPU cycles and some RAM, you've got all you need to run Memcached. And also people who go in and fine-tune their cache. Yeah. So for the super caching experts who want to go tweak who are familiar with Memcached and want to go tweak some of the settings there, I think it's reasonable there to use it too.
But. Yeah, I mean, you could end up using the local cache option with Windows Azure Caching, but I think as you point out here, then you would also still need to provision a cache in the Windows Azure Caching.
And your writes all have to sort of go through to that anyway. So you actually have to use that sort of cache too.
Excellent. Cool. We'll take a look at that.
It's fun. And our last bit of news is really our transition thing because this is
transition.
Brand new, just released.
Yep. So the Windows Azure Toolkit for Android. We've talked about the Windows Azure Toolkit for devices for a while now. I mean, probably the couple months ago was the first time we mentioned it, but we've got a set of toolkits for Windows Phone, for iOS, and Android. And we just released the Android one. We talked about it for the first time in May and said that we were working on it and that we had hoped to release it before the end of the summer. I think we missed the end of the summer by a week. Didn't summer end about a week ago?
I have no idea when summer starts and ends.
So I shouldn't have taken any time off in the middle of the summer, I guess, and I should have just been working on the toolkits.
I agree.
But at any rate, it's here now. So take a look. What we've basically done is we've placed it out on GitHub. So if you end up going to our GitHub repository, let me make this a little. Oh no! What did I do? There we go. So right here, you can see it. It's at Microsoft-DPE is the organization, and then WA-Toolkit-Android. Essentially, it's got everything out here. So it's version 0.8. And the reason we're not calling it a version 1.0 is while the library is fully functional and provides all the APIs on top of storage, the sample app, we haven't taken the sample app as far as some of the other ones. So we wanted to at least hold back a little bit until we get some time to really polish it up. So the sample application that we ship with it, because it is so simple, I called it simple.
It's the simple sample.
It's the simple sample.
I like that.
Yeah, and really all it is it's... it's a UI on top of the library. So it does demonstrate how to use the library, but it does not provide you any sort of context as to how to go about building a nice UI with Android. Everything's up here. You can take a look at it. The library is, we've pushed the whole library. If you want to get started, here's what I end up recommending is go out to the Google Android SDK site and walk through the steps there required in order to get Android up and running in Eclipse. So you'll have to download a version of Eclipse. You'll have to download the SDK. You got to set up some stuff. I mean, it takes a good 45 minutes to get set up. But once that's done, then you're ready to go with this toolkit. You can just download the source and start running it. So, for instance, what I've done here, let's see, is let me open up Eclipse. Once you get Eclipse open, Eclipse has this concept of a workspace. And what you'll do is you'll want to make sure that everything is in your workspace. So here you can see I've got my Package Explorer, and this is the workspace that's defined. And I've got each of those folders and each of those items added to it. So I've got my library, my simple sample, and tests. Now, I don't know a ton about Eclipse. I've been learning a lot about Eclipse. I noticed some quirks, like for instance, I opened this up and you'll see that there's a problem. If you just go to clean and clean everything, and then build all, it should go away. So for some reason, opening up Eclipse each time generates this error. If any of you out there know what I can do to resolve this so that I don't have to do it each time, I'd appreciate it. But I guess that could be a slight little tip here working with the Android toolkit. But now you can see that I've got everything built. The library, if you want to take a look at the source, everything has been defined in a series of Java classes that you can walk through. Our namespace com.windowsazure.samples and everything lives underneath it. It's pretty straightforward. Take a look at it. If you looked at any of the other storage client libraries that either Steve or other people have built, you're going to see a lot of this, you know, similar things. But essentially, it's a library that goes on top of the on top of storage. And then for our simple sample, if you take a look at the way it's configured, we can come up here to Android, and you'll see that we reference our library as an Android library. Now, this is a slightly different convention than most Java-based, you know, Java and Eclipse-based applications work. It's specific to Android, and you'll only end up seeing these properties and capabilities once you install Android. The library project itself is flagged as is library, which allows us to reference it as such. And if you want to get running, you can just go ahead and you know, click out, click run. And I should already have the emulator started. Just a warning, the Android emulator takes a long time to start up. I mean, I've got a pretty powerful machine here, and if I didn't have that already running, we'd be waiting for quite a while.
The last time I used the Android emulator was when I was trying to get Angry Birds to run on my laptop by installing the Android emulator and getting the free
nice
Angry Birds thing.
Did it work?
I never got it actually working. I got it like sort of starting up, like the music played and whatever, but the video stuff was weird. And I don't know if that's because they tried really hard to make sure that it wouldn't work when you did it that way, or if I had something else broken on it. But yeah.
So at any rate, it started. Now here's our simple sample. As you can see,
it's beautiful.
It's very simple. The services that power this, or I should say the services that you can use as part of it, can work in a couple of different ways. One, and kind of by default, it's set up so that it makes a direct connection to Windows Azure Storage. So that means that the account name and key are in the sample application so that you can just talk directly to storage. We don't consider this a best practice.
Don't do that.
Don't do it. The reason it is here, and so the library is built so that the library doesn't care if you're talking to the proxy or to storage directly. It works the same. It's just how you authenticate to it. Right. And to be honest, when doing development, it's sometimes easier to just put your key in there and get going.
Right. So when you really deploy, you'll be deploying a Windows Azure set of services that will talk to storage, and you'll talk to that thing and authenticate via some other by the identity you've logged in.
So the way that so the services support authentication both through ASP.NET membership. So we just use standard membership and membership providers, as well as access control service. In both scenarios, when you authenticate, you'll end up getting a token, and you can use that token for all your requests to our proxy services. Right. That way, you don't have to have any knowledge of the underlying storage account information on the device. All that stays in the service, and you're just authenticating through a short-lived token that you have.
And that's the right way to do. Please do when you actually deploy your app or whatever. Don't put your storage credentials in there because someone will steal them and upload their private DVD collection.
As soon
collection.
As you do that, your secrets are no longer secret.
So, that's right. And what is a secret if it's not secret?
Yeah. So, Quick demonstration. You know, here what you can do is, you know, iterate on top of, or I should say enumerate the various things within tables, blobs, and queues. So, for instance, I can come in here and take a look at table storage. I have a table called I'm a table. Do you like that?
That's a good name.
Thanks. Yeah. I can create a table for Steve.
Shouldn't it be I'm also a table?
You know what? If I should have done that.
You missed an opportunity.
I did miss an opportunity. And there's for Steve, and I'm a table. So pretty straightforward. We can look at blobs as well. So I've got a container of images here. I can enumerate the images. and you know, we can browse them, we can take a look. And then similarly with queues, you can end up taking a look at queues here and interacting with queues. So pretty simple sample application.
I think just to show things
just to show things work. Yeah. The other thing that we've done to make sure to really demonstrate that things work. Oh, nice. Thank you, emulator. Bye-bye. All right. The other thing that we've done is rather than just having to open up an emulator and doing something simple, is we've created a series of Android JUnit tests as well that should cover the library pretty exhaustively. And if you want these things to run, basically just come down here, run as Android JUnit test, and it's going to launch everything. Ooh, that's a very large emulator that it launched. And in a moment or two, we'll let it get started here. I think it still loads the APK and everything for Android into the emulator, even though it's just going to use a bunch of JUnit tests for it. So,
It's the device startup stuff that's loading the whole thing.
So eventually it'll get running here. But essentially, the unit tests also show how to exercise the library.
Right.
So the idea here is take a look at it. Now, first of all, I'd love feedback on it. I mean, this is the first time we've released anything for the Android platform. So would love feedback for it. One of the reasons that we chose GitHub as a repository is not only do we want that feedback, but we want your involvement as well. I think we mentioned for the Android or for the iOS toolkit, we actually got some commits back, pull requests that that we accepted, and we merged changes back into.
So fork away.
Yeah, so fork
away.
Go
to GitHub, create a little fork, fix some bugs, or add some stuff, or build a better example app.
At any rate, take a look at it. All those unit tests are set up here.
Cool.
So now that's one of the announcements. There's more.
But wait,
wow, there's more.
How could there be more, Wade? That by itself is so fascinating.
So one of the things we in this blog post as well is that we've also made some updates to the Windows Phone Toolkit, and this is up at our CodePlex site. Grab it, download the bits. Essentially, what we've done is added some new capabilities. First is we've included SQL Azure. So we've always had the Windows Azure storage support. Mm-hmm. Now we've included SQL Azure, and we exercise this in two different ways. One is if you choose SQL Azure as part of the default kind of sample, it'll use SQL Azure for all the membership stores. So it'll actually use the
cool.
SQL Azure
yep.
membership provider. I will point out, though, that we did not update it yet to the universal providers, and that is something that within a few weeks we should have an update for. It kind of caught us out of band, and we just didn't have the time to go through and do all the regressions for it. So we will update to the universal providers, but it is out there using SQL Azure. The other thing is we provided a sample of how you could interact with data in SQL Azure via an OData service. So when you open up the phone and run the phone client, you'll see one of the pages actually will enumerate data in SQL Azure and just demonstrate how you can do CRUD operations against it through that OData service. So that's one, and I think that's a
cool.
good update,
yep.
I think, showing the SQL Azure stuff. The next is we were using MVC 2. We upgraded to MVC 3, which is a nice update.
It's 50% better than 2. 3 is...
We updated everything to use the Windows Azure tools for Visual Studio 2010 1.4.
Wow, I'm impressed. I don't know if I could have done that.
And the Windows Phone Developer Tools 7.1 RC.
Okay.
So essentially what we've done, we've just made sure that it's up
all
to
the
date
numbers,
with all the latest versions.
All the
of
numbers have increased. That's what if we went from 2 to 3, from 1.3 to 1.4, from
the
7
phone
to 7.1.
Stuff, the beta was 7.1. They just, they were in beta, then it was beta 2, then it was beta 2 refresh, and now it's RC.
Oh, so. I see. So those numbers aren't going. Those are letters.
Those were letters changing,
right? Because it went A, B, and then R, C, right? So,
so we have made those updates. Then the last thing is we released Babelcam as a sample app.
Yes.
So I don't know if any of you have seen Babelcam. I showed it on the show.
I think
didn't
we
I?
Did, but I can't remember for sure. I don't remember actually doing the demo on the show, so I'm not sure that we did.
Well. What I want to highlight is we've shipped the source to Babelcam within the toolkit, so you get the full source. We have a 7.0 and a 7.1 project for it, so you can take a look and deploy it as both a Windows Phone 7 as well as a Windows Phone Mango 7.1 yep. version. But we also released it to the marketplace. And the reason I think this is kind of cool is now you can not only take a look at the source, run it, show people, demo it, and so forth, but you can also invite people to download it and try it out. It's a fun app. Basically, it provides both OCR as well as translation services. So with your phone, you can take a picture of some text that you see lying around. It gets sent off to the MSR Hawaii service, mm-hmm. And basically does an OCR on it and then passes it off to the Bing translator service and translates it to whatever language you want it translated to. And then it uses a push notification to be
like
sent
Estonian.
Back
to you. My favorite is Estonian. I like to translate everything.
Here is some Estonian. Actually.
Is that actually you
well,
have
it doesn't
Estonian
look particularly good, but yes. Well, the picture screenshot I put there, that is Estonian. So
we share this love of Estonian.
You know what's cool about this?
What?
So Estonian uses, UTF-8. Okay. So it's a flavor of Unicode, which is a much larger payload. And previously in Babelcam, we'd only sent the translated text down as part of the raw message payload, right? Because we're able to use like ASCII encoding. Right. Well, as soon as we started doing all these translations with Estonian, we started noticing that
it ran out of space.
It ran out of space and we weren't getting our messages. So it actually implements a neat little pattern here where you push a message down to the app, basically just telling the app, hey, got something that you need to get, and then it calls out to a service and does a refresh. So
it's a good pattern.
There's all kinds of good little nuggets within this sample. So,
you're right.
At any rate, so take a look at that. I'm going to also very quickly show you.
I'm going to take credit for the name of Babelcam, by the way, because I believe.
Did you come up with it?
I'm pretty sure that we were having a conversation trying to name it, and I think Babelcam was my suggestion.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you like the graphic?
I did. The graphic is a good addition.
Yeah.
I like it.
When you install the new V6 file, so remember we've got a Visual Studio extensibility prod,
Yeah.
It's
an extension.
Deliverable. V6.
Yeah.
File that we deliver that creates the project templates. What you're going to see new here is now that we support both Windows Azure Storage and SQL Azure is you can really pick and choose what you want. In fact, you can choose to do both. Then you'll still get all the demonstrations of how to use the Windows Azure tables, blobs, and queues along with SQL Azure. Or you can just choose SQL Azure. With Windows Phone Storage Emulator, it's always been nice that you can run things locally just from development. And so we basically use the same kind of pattern where if you don't want to use your SQL Azure database or you don't have one right now or whatever the reason may be, you can just end up using
SQL Express locally, which pretty much everybody who's going to be doing this has installed because that's what the storage emulator for Windows Azure uses. So.
Yep. So it'll end up creating everything. And essentially once this is done, we can hit F5 and we can start running. So that's that. Yeah, so
cool.
Those are the updates. Maybe the last thing, there's always more.
Oh, there's another, but wait, there's more?
I was already sold. All right, well, I've got some more for you. On the iOS side, we've made a lot of updates to the library. So probably a month ago, we got some reports of memory leaks in it. And Scott Dinsmore, who's on the Patterns and Practices team, he's an iOS ninja. I've learned so much great stuff from him, and particularly how to go about diagnosing these memory leaks using some of the tools.
This is one of these platforms where apparently memory doesn't automatically get cleaned up for
you. Well, Objective-C will, but you end up using some C libraries sometimes. So we're actually using an XML libc client library.
So that's where you have to actually properly...
And we actually have to, deallocate
to worry about,
things,
like, memory leaks
and... And so, at any rate, he just...
Nonsense like that.
He's provided a ton of support, made some great updates. We've been able to pass stuff back off to some customers and partners that are using it, validated that those leaks are no longer there. And then we've also restructured the GitHub repository quite a bit. And one of the things that he did is he set it up so that you can actually submodule it via Git. So rather than your sample only using a compiled version of the library, it's now submoduled and referencing the source as well. So it just makes development that much nicer.
It's easier to pull the new changes.
And if you've got changes if there's, maybe you find another memory leak. I mean, this gives you that opportunity to actually dig into the library while you're running that sample to see what's going on. So
cool.
That's it. That's all I've got.
All right. But wait, there's more. No, okay. So. That's cool. So for all you phony people, who are developing on phones, a good set of updates on that. Yeah. I think that takes us to the most magical time of the Cloud Cover Show, which is the introduction to the tip of the week. And I'm looking at you, Wade. Do you have any instructions for Bob?
Yeah, Bob, I do have something that's really nice that I think everyone's going to enjoy. And so
nearly everyone is going to enjoy.
I'm pretty sure everyone's going to enjoy it.
Okay.
So with that, here's your tip of the week.
And we're back. That was lovely. Thanks, Wade, for suggesting that. I wanted to talk about a little tip about handling the comings and goings of virtual machines in Windows Azure. One of the great things about Windows Azure is you can just go to the portal and click a button and get more instances or fewer instances.
Yep.
When you do that, some events fire. There's sort of a whole life cycle of these things, and there are events that you can hook into, and that's what we've sort of pulled up the documentation here for some of the events on that the role environment class gives you. And one of those events is you can get a changing event, and that happens when like you change a configuration setting, or you change the topology of the application. So these sort of come in flavors. So you'll get event args that sort of come in a few different that sort of list all the changes, and they come in a few different types. And one of those is this topology event thing. And as I was doing some of the memcached stuff, I was looking at this to use to find out when new memcached servers were coming online, so that I could sort of adjust.
Yep.
And what I've learned about this, I think I knew this, but it's sort of forgotten over time, and so hence I think it makes a good tip because it's something people don't think about. The timing of these events is, so when I go to the portal and I say, now I want 5, I had 2 instances, I went to 5, the 2 that are already up and running will get events at that time that says, okay, now there are 5, and they're, you know, and then you can get the IDs of all of them and the IP addresses of all of them. But they're all still starting up. That doesn't mean they're, already at the ready state, so that doesn't mean they're listening on internal endpoints and things like that. So you'll have a period of, 10 minutes, maybe, while things are spinning up, where you will, when you sort of query the environment or when you listen to this event, you'll see these new instances, but they're not fully operational yet. So if you try to actually use them, you'll fail to connect on the socket or something like that. And so what I'm going to suggest is the tip, I mean, one thing is just be aware that that's the behavior. My tip is if you are relying on, if you need to know when something has spun up so that you can talk to it, you're going to want to use some other mechanism to know when it's actually up and ready and online. And I actually have 2 suggestions. I'll start with the simpler one, which is if what you need to know is can you connect to it, just try to connect and see if it works. So do the simpler thing first, which is what I ended up doing in the memcached stuff, which is try to open the socket, and if it connects, it's there. If it doesn't, then it's not ready yet. The other one that you might do is do some sort of out of band accounting of these yourself. So you might have a table where each role instance, once it gets into the ready state, it notes that in the table and says, hey, I'm ID whatever, and yeah, I'm actually ready to go now. That way you can always query that, and that'll give you sort of your application defined semantics about whether you're up or you're down or you're ready.
Right.
So that gives you a lot of flexibility to do things like take things offline temporarily and let everybody know. And
you might still want to make sure that you've implemented option 1, because who knows if one of those instances crashes, yet the table still ends up saying.
Right. No matter what, you're going to have to be able to handle, you try to connect to something and it's not there.
But you can do some other nice things if you audit it somewhere.
The tracking makes it easier to sort of to tell and to distinguish the difference between it should be accepting connections, but it's not, versus it's not actually up yet, and things like that. And so basically, just want to raise people's awareness about this. Once you understand that behavior and think it through, it's actually pretty easy to design what you need.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people, I think, make assumptions about when the events fire and whatever, and just sort of use that without without understanding exactly the timing of all those things. Good. So that's it. That's my tip for this week.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that tip.
You're welcome, Wayne. All right. That's about it. So as always, tweet to us at Cloud Cover Show. Tell Wade how to do his Eclipse stuff that he doesn't
please.
Know how to do.
Yeah.
Go fork projects on GitHub. Go to CodePlex. Do the same and sort of send changes on all this stuff back
please.
Because that's why it's being done. In the open source way.
Yep.
So go do that, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks.